Menelaus, king of Sparta, the fiery brother of Agamemnon, husband of the beauty of Helen, was on his journey home following the 10-year-long Trojan War. Shipwrecked on the island of Pharos, Menelaus was desperate when the goddess Eidothea told him of her father, the immortal Proteus, the old man of the sea. If Menelaus could defeat him, Proteus would surrender the secrets Menelaus needed to lead his men home to Sparta. Defeating Proteus would be difficult because the god possessed a special power. He was a shapeshifter, a polymorph. So Menelaus and his men, disguised as seal skins, laid an ambush on the beach. As Proteus emerged salty and frothy from the rolling sea, they sprang into action. First, he shifted into the great bearded lion, then a serpent, a panther, a ramping wild boar, a torrent of water, a tree with soaring branch tops. But the Greeks clung firmly. Their normal weapons of little use, with each shift, they shifted. With each new challenge, they changed. Clenching their legs tighter on the necks of the animals that appeared, or digging their fingers into the wooden limbs of the tree, or wrapping their arms around the swirling balls of mercurial fire. The old man of the sea was defeated. By adapting, the Greeks found their way home. And that was the opening of the book that we'll be discussing today by General Stanley McChrystal, entitled Team of Teams, New Roles of Engagement for a Complex World. Last year, a colleague of mine lent me a copy of this book, and from the start, as we just read, I was hooked. I mean, how often do we as athletic trainers continually have to adapt to, as the book puts it, find a way home? Welcoming to the show today is someone who is no stranger to the sports medicine broadcast and the very person who introduced me to today's topic and book, my friend, Kelly Salter. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. And joining us as well is Jeremy. Good morning, Jeremy.
Of course. Thanks for being here, John. Thanks for being here, Kelly.
Absolutely. So if you had a chance to listen to our first episode on leadership and athletic training, you heard us discuss the book Extreme Ownership. In similar fashion today, I just want to point out that we are only going to hit a few parts of the book and only a handful of chapters. Kelly and I, we met yesterday and we talked a little bit. And I've read this book a couple times, and I know Kelly was a big fan of this book. But I kept trying to think, like, why is this book such a good book when it comes to leadership building and leadership traits for athletic training? And, you know, we talked a little bit about it, and I was going back and forth, and, you know, there's so many good lessons in this book, but how does it really help athletic trainers? And one of the things that we kept saying is that it's a book about building relationship and building trust. So when we look at working within our different teams, so quote unquote teams, you know, whether it's our team doctors, whether it's a doctor from another city or another practice, whether it's working with a physical therapist, you know, whether it's working with other athletic trainers. I know Kelly and myself, we're not in the same school district, but we do have a shared team that we work with, you know, and even when we see each other on the field, we're always constantly working together. And then how do we use this book to actually work between our actual teams? So between our football team, between our swimming team, between our wrestling programs, how do we use the lessons learned in HIST to actually help better serve our athletes and, you know, the, like I said, quote unquote teams. So, you know, one of the things, like I had said, was it just kept constantly going back to building relationships and building trust. So, that's what I really took away from this book. And I really am excited to, kind of get after reading the big parts in this book and the chapters that we really felt that would really help, athletic trainers and overall, how can something like this help us serve our athletes a little bit better?
Yeah, I was recommended to read this book at a conference I went to out at the University of Michigan a little over a year ago. And when I picked it up at first, you know, I thought team of teams, and I was explaining to you yesterday, I had to kind of shift my entire thinking pattern. As an athletic trainer, oftentimes we forget that we're part of a bigger team because a lot of our day is spent doing our own thing. Mm-hmm. So whether it's our paperwork or how we interact with athletes or whatever, and then on a Friday night, we might get a larger portion of the sports medicine team. And so it really was like a shift in my thinking to remind myself that I am part of a larger team, whether that be at my school, and the different teams I serve there, athletic director, administrators, coaches, athletes, parents, but then even the athletic training team, just in the broader sense in our conference, the doctors we work with. And so, you know, initially when I picked up the book, I was a little skeptical whether it was going to really apply to me. And right in the intro, I realized how what a important book it was going to be for me to read. And one of the first quotes that I read in that introduction was something that I find athletic trainers and anybody in that sports medicine team can get caught up in, especially those of us who've been around a while. Things change. And if we're not willing to adapt, we kind of dig our heels in and we become that generation or that group of people that's like, this generation is softer, or this generation isn't doing things well, or this generation, you know, and on and on and on. And I've been guilty of that. And as I was reading in this book, just in the intro, came to a quote and it said, we're not lazier or less intelligent than our parents, but what worked for them simply won't do the trick for us. Understanding and adapting isn't optional. It will be what differentiates success from failure in the years ahead. And so that transition and adaptation of building trust in times that are different now than they were when I started in this field 20 plus years ago, you know, immediately in the intro, I realized this was going to be a good book.
Yeah, one of the things I really liked about the first chapter, you know, as it talks about the changing environments, changing, you know, we have to constantly adapt. And that's something that I really think athletic trainers are just amazing at doing. Like, we constantly have to adapt, whether it's a different tape job for, you know, the same person or two different people. Like, those little things always have to change and adapt because, I mean, we'll just take the taping example. You can't tape a person who's 5'1", 100 pounds, the same as somebody who's 6'1", 250 pounds, right? Like, that's just a little adaptation. If you don't change, you're not going to be successful in whether, I mean, that's just a tape job, but you're not going to be successful in those things. So if we look at it on the further or a bigger aspect, like, we have to constantly adapt and change in how we treat our athletes, how we communicate with our athletes, how we build trust mm-hmm. within our athletes. I may be able to build trust or a relationship with an athlete, athlete A, and if I use the same tactics on athlete B, it could be completely disastrous. Like, you know, we have those athletes, we have those people we work with, the doctors that we work with that are, we can joke with, we can be a little crass sometimes. And then the other ones, you have to be extremely polished and, you know, you can't take some liberties that you would say with somebody else. So, you know, we're constantly adapting, constantly changing. And that was one of the things in the recap of the book of the first chapter was, you know, we have to worry less about the tactics and technology and more on the internal architecture of our culture to mm-hmm. rely on those changes and to make true adaptations. You know, like I love that first line, to make our way home. It's right. You know, we're not working to get home in a sense. We're not working to better our student athletes and better their experience or better, you know, the way we practice.
Right. And constantly just, you know, it's that idea of understanding that, much like he says in the book, you know, the enemy they fought was different in the way that they fought it. Social media changed that, technology changed that. And you can look at our careers and say it's the same thing. The access to information that our student athletes have, our coaches have, and our parents have on Twitter and all of those different things changes how they interact with us based on information they might have gotten that could be true, could be, you know, obviously not true. You know, they can get information from a wide variety of sources. And I think, you know, it's reminding ourselves, or at least for me, the big takeaway was, you know, you can again kind of dig your heels in and be like, I don't like this. or you can adapt and figure out how to work alongside of it. And so maybe it's you change up your social media and the information you're putting out there to make sure they're getting fed information that's true, that you've, mm-hmm. you know, backtracked and done things with, and moving out of that mindset of this is the way we've always done it to this is how we need to adapt to make sure that our student athletes are healthy, that they're educated, that they're reaching whatever their goals are, whatever their potential is, that we are coming alongside and helping them reach them. You know, in that sense.
Right. I think about like our continuing education, how important that is. And I mean, you're never going to find an athletic trainer who doesn't gripe about the changes in athletic, you know, in yeah. our continuing education. I mean, especially when, you know, EBP started coming up, it's like, yeah. I have to do 10
they're
more.
Evil.
They're evil. They're taking away time from me. All right. Well, hey, listen, you're not going to be a good athletic trainer. Hey, you know what? Let me stop right there. I was probably one of those people. No, I wasn't probably. I was one of those people that like griped and I was like, God bless it. You know, okay, hold yeah. on. I need to be better. I need yeah. to embrace this change because if I don't, then I'm not going to be a better athletic trainer. I'm not going to be a better person. Right. And, you know, you see it all over the place that people who just continuously don't want to change or don't want to do more, those are the ones that are being left behind. You know, those mm-hmm. are the ones that aren't growing. Those are the ones who that their students come to you, you know, at an away game and say, hey, listen, you know, my athletic trainers, you know, they kind of grumble about something. It's like, oh, well, I wish that person will learn from that. But,
right.
you know, it's the importance of that internal architecture of change and culture. Things mm-hmm. are always going to change. Things are always, always, always going to change. And we have to be able to adapt to those things.
Yeah. And switching our mindset, because it is so much easier to gripe about those changes mm-hmm. initially, to gripe about them, than it is to stop and really assess why those changes have come to play and then how it's going to help you as an athletic trainer, and making that like shift in your mind of saying, okay, this is why we're doing this, you know? And I think back to, you know, 1996, when I came out of college, you know, and all the changes, licensure, and my initial response to licensure, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I look back and think how easy it is to be like, oh, they just want my money. They just, you know, and not seeing the bigger picture or being willing to stop and slow down and investigate and realize the benefits and the necessity of the things, you know, that we're doing.
Yeah.
Let me jump
yeah.
in right there. So that's one of the things that I love about the podcast is that, you know, as you're talking about people complaining and the changes in licensure, the entry-level masters, is that with the podcast, I have spoken with the president of the NATA, the president of the mm-hmm. KD, if that's what it's called, CEO, president of KD. I haven't talked with the lead of the BOC yet, but in those conversations, I get to see and understand the bigger picture, and also I get to share it here. And it's not about right. what we've always done has worked for what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's about being prepared for what's next, what may be coming in the future. And yes, there's a lot of athletic trainers that don't want to change. And there's times where I don't think those changes are the best. However, like you just said, it's about seeing the bigger picture, about being part of something larger. So being willing to say, take a chance and just step forward and say, okay, help me understand why. And then we'll do it. And then again, so much as we talked about it in extreme ownership, you know, understanding the commander's intent, leading up and down the chain, explain why, those right. kind of things. But I think there is a lack of explanation from the top and a lack of attempt to understand from the bottom. And so, again, those people that are there in the middle that are meeting and going both ways, then that's really exactly what we're talking about here. They're willing to make the changes. So, all right, go ahead, continue.
No, yeah, it's I'm glad you're going to chime in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's being able to understand those things, but also understand that like we've been saying, things are going to change and we have to be ready for those things. And if we're not, you know, we're not going to be at the forefront. Yeah. I think everybody has griped about the entry-level masters. You know, me, it's going to affect me probably more personal because of my internship program at the high school. But like, there's nothing I can do about it. Hey, I'm going to have to deal with it when it comes up. If I lose an intern or if I gain an intern, whatever it is, like I'll deal with it. And I just have to have the understanding, but I know it's going to be better for our profession overall. Mm-hmm. And it may not take place right away, but you know that there's going to be an investment in the future and it's going to make our profession so much better as we go forward. And that's one of the things that we look at when we're talking about, when we go back to the book, was one of the chapters from complicated to complex. And we understand that there's a difference between it. So I'm going to go ahead and just read from the book and just talk about the difference between complex and complicated. I think that's what I just said. So being complex is different from being complicated. Things that are complicated may have many parts, but those parts are joined one to the next in a relatively simple way. One cog turns, causing the next one to turn and as well, and so on and so on. Complexity, on the other hand, occurs when a number of interactions between components increases dramatically. The interdependencies that allow viruses and banks run to spread, this is where things become quickly unpredictable. Think about the break in a pool game. The first forceful strike of the colored balls with the white cue ball. Although there are 16 balls on the table and the physics is that of a simple mechanic, it's almost impossible to predict where everything will end up. So when we look at our environment, things are almost always complex. They're complicated. And when things are complicated, they're a little bit easier. We can kind of predict those things. But when we look at complexity, things are always hard to predict. So we may try to, but if we have an understanding that things are going to be complex and all over the place, and we don't always know where they're going to end up, you know, we can have trouble predicting how we can respond to those things. Kelly, I don't know if you got a chance to cover that chapter or read through that. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great chapter just in the sense of just realizing, which we kind of touched on, athletic training is incredibly complex. So there's no, you know, I know that, you know, every doctor has a protocol for, you know, certain injuries, and we put together protocols for, you know, how we handle certain situations, but then every situation presents its own change. So, you know, it could be that the athlete that we're, you know, treating in this particular emergency happens to be a diabetic. And so that adds a new, you know, a new thing to how we're handling it, or just, you know, your ACL patient who has really poor, you know, hip mobility. And so it's changing how, you know, we're treating and doing those things. And I think that understanding, like going into our jobs and our fields and our schools or our clinics or wherever we're employed as athletic trainers, and walking in understanding that there's not, you know, they talked a huge amount about Taylor and how he went in and you know, made these factories exceptionally efficient. So you just did your, you know, your one piece, and that's the only piece you understood, and these factories were, you know, efficient. We can't operate like that because of the complexity of what we do. And it's interesting to understand too, as you look at that complex situation, to understand all the moving parts. So speaking to every coach is going to be different, and you might have an overprotective parent versus a parent who wants Johnny to go back in right away. And you might have a compliant kid who wants to do all the right things versus the kid who just wants to get back in there and is non-compliant. And all of those factors come in, and that's where being flexible and adaptable, going back to that Proteus, and figuring out how are you going to morph yourself to make this situation reach its maximum potential or its goal, whether that's getting him back on the field or, you know, whatever that might be. And there was just no doubt as I was reading that, like, for me, there was no way to look at athletic training and fit it into any sort of a machine shop type assembly line. Like, it just doesn't work in my mind. And understanding that is helpful.
Yeah. I remember, like, when I first started, I wanted to build an ankle rehab protocol, which is super, it's fairly easy to do. Like, you can do the four-way ankle and you can do balance board and, you know, calf stretching. But then I quickly realized, like, everybody's different, you know, and not everybody's going to respond to the same thing over and over and over. And they may plateau. Some people it may work amazing for. Other people, right, it's just not going to work day one. And, you know, that was a small example, but it helped me realize, like, I'm going to have to adapt literally every single patient, every single athlete to get the best out of them. And if I'm not doing that, then it's easy, absolutely easy to just throw a home exercise or throw a simple rehab at everybody. Oh, your shoulder's injured, you're going to do this. You know, your low back's injured, you're going to do these four stretches. And then just walk away. Like, that's really, really easy.
Right.
But the ones who actually do the individual work that change things, that understand the complexity of each person or each relationship, you know, whether it, like you said, the coaches, the parents, if you're able to adapt to those things, you're a better practitioner, you're a better athletic trainer, and you're a better leader when it comes to dealing with those people.
And I would second, like, I completely agree. And I think a key theme throughout this is understanding that that protocol not working for athlete A doesn't make it any less of a valuable protocol. It doesn't mean that you spend any less time investing in it, but it means it just needs to be adapted to fit athlete A. And that's going to take humility on our parts to understand. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes we can get latched onto the pride. Well, this is my protocol. This is how we do things. This is going to work, right?
Right.
Because we don't want to understand that, you know, and there's a quote in here and I've got it written in. It's one of the later chapters, but it's just understanding. It's just, it doesn't mean it was any less of effective of a protocol. It just means it needed to be adapted for, you know, this certain athlete, and that humility piece of saying, hey, I'm willing to switch this, or I'm willing to call John and say, hey, I've got this low back patient. Nothing's working. Do you have anything that might help? That doesn't make me less valuable of an athletic trainer. It just means that I'm willing to adapt and humble myself to say, hey, someone else might have a better idea out there that might work. Yeah. If the goal is really that athlete A gets to where he wants to be, then it shouldn't matter the means.
And that's a hard thing to learn in itself, is to have humility and reach out and ask for help. You know, I'm one of the worst when it comes to asking for help. And it's like, it's so hard, but once you're able to do it, and like, you really have to take a step back and say, okay, really, I don't have all the answers. I do need help with this. I do just need, and even if it's just one little thing, like, it doesn't mean you're less of a person. It doesn't mean you're less of an athletic trainer. It just means you don't have all the answers, which is actually a pretty good thing. Like, if you have all the answers, like, what's the point? You know, like, go do something else. We need to rely on each other and rely on, you know, as the book talks about, our different teams. So, you know, there's been times that, you know, you and I have reached out to each other, or, you know, somebody else in our conference or somebody across the state has given me a call, and it may be a simple answer for me, but it's not for them. But like, that doesn't mean I'm not going to have the same type of question for that person later on down the road. Just having the humility to reach out and to talk to other people and ask for those questions is a good thing.
And I think, you know, going back for me, you know, and you have a similar, you have interns that, you know, regularly come in and have a little more of that type of team, but it's like, you know, we're not affiliated with a hospital. I'm not affiliated with a clinic. I'm really just the only one of me, really, in our school district, definitely in my school, you know what I mean? I'm the only one of me. And so there really is, it can kind of breed this whole kind of lone ranger mentality. Like, well, I just have to do everything myself. I just have to do it. I just have to do it. I'm going to work harder. I'm going to work, you know, do it. And at the end of the day, I forget, like, you know, I ran into one of our counterparts, Mike, when we played Troy, and, you know, chatting with him and remembering, like, you know, there's still people out there who are willing to pitch in and help, who want to talk, who want to, you know, build relationships. And so I have to do my part in that as well. And not, you know, it can't always be work harder. Sometimes it's got to be work smarter and utilize the resources you have around you. Hey.
I knew that was going to happen. Usually it's around the 45 minute mark. They start acting up.
Love it.
So yeah, speaking of teams, my team here is starting to wake up. I think what you're starting to touch on right there is, you know, the book talks about Stanley McChrystal was the head of, or the leader of, the special forces. So, you know, the Army Rangers and the Navy SEALs, during his time in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And obviously you have these high achieving teams, and they're smaller teams, and alone, they're really, really good at their jobs. And that's, you know, I talked about this when we talked about extreme ownership and some of those other things. Like, I really look at athletic trainers, like, we are the special operations when it comes to medicine sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when we get stuck in our own silos, Like, we're really good at our jobs, and we're really, really good. But then we have to learn to reach out and talk to other people and to communicate. How can we better help our athletes? And, you know, like within our area, I think we do a pretty good job of communication, not only to help our student athletes, but to help make athletic training better within the area, to help promote it, to help promote each other. How many times have we reached out to each other and said, hey, something's up in my district, or, you know, how do we communicate with our boss, or how do we go to our hospital system and provide this information? And it's the times that we've all come together and sat down and talked and had those communications and really gone forward with promoting ourselves within each other. And that right. just, that goes back to the book in itself of those teams of teams. And even though there's only one of us at each school, we're still necessarily a team, and how can we right. operate together?
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, that was probably one of my favorite chapters, is looking into building that and how they did it, which, you know, took some time and it took a lot of humility. And I think, like, on the magnitude of national security and fighting a war, that they were able to, like, come together and, like, admit, like, some things aren't working and this mm-hmm. is what we need to do, you know. And I loved reading that in learning from that, and then realizing, you know, I spent some time going through and, like, kind of mapping out what my teams look like, you know, and what that is. And so what's my sports medicine team? And so, you know, talking about the PT I work with and the docs I work with. And then, you know, this summer I spent some time, we don't have a fire department in Beverly Hills. And so we have two contract EMS, you know, people that we use, and one was willing to work with me and one wasn't. And so I was able to meet with them and bring them on board as a team and talk protocols and what's going to happen when you get to the school, and, you know, what do you guys do and why do you do it? And what do we do and why do we do it? And kind of getting on the same page, you know, in that sense. And then even amongst, so, you know, you can silo yourself. Oh, go ahead.
Let's talk about that. I thought you did a really good job of, you know, like you said, talking with your EMS crew in that area. And we can go ahead and talk about what happened a couple of weeks ago. Kelly and I, our teams played each other, and I wasn't there. I took a weekend sabbatical away. So Kelly, you know, because of her proactivity and willingness to work with the EMS crews in her area, how important was that in handling that type of situation where we had a student athlete that needed spine boarding?
Yeah, so it was huge. And again, you know, I went over with what you know, the NATA has considered best practice. I don't think, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's what they called, and I printed it off, and they brought to me what we had, and there were some differences in there. And I talked to, you know, our local hospital. I was able to talk to them before I came, and they're good with equipment removal and have, you know, what they need. And so we were able to come up with a protocol that worked for both of us. So again, I could have walked in and said, this is how we're doing it. You know, it's my school. And there were parts of the protocol that I was firm on, but then they came to me with what they believed and what they saw in the field and what they regularly did. And we were able to come up with a protocol that worked. And so on the field, and what I appreciated about your AT that was there, Dana, you know, she was like, what's your protocol? So yeah. we all were quickly, you know, on the same page. And I think back, had I not taken those couple of days and gone and done that, which, it's summer, right? So maybe I say, like, no, I don't want to, but they were willing, and it brought us to a place that in the event that something happens like that, we were able to maneuver and handle it. And it was good. Right. It was good.
Yeah. So that just example right there kind of exemplifies the next chapter we were going to talk about, was actually chapter 4 in Doing the Right Thing. And that's what it talks about, is the difference between efficiency and effectiveness. So right. efficiency is doing things right. Like, obviously that's what you did, but effectiveness is doing the right thing constantly. So if right. you're always doing those things right, you have a comfort within yourself that things are going to turn out well, or as well as they can be. So like in that incident right there, because everybody automatically went on to the same page, or they were already almost on the same page, and it just took a handful of people to ask the right question. Mm-hmm. Boom, everybody's on the same page. You are now very effective in handling a situation that needs an emergency situation. And right. how great did that feel for you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. And it is, you know, I think, again, I'm going to refer back to when I entered this field, which was a while ago, and there was a lot of animosity between, you know, EMTs and ATs and PTs, and they don't respect us and they don't know what they're doing. And just like this whole kind of, you know, like rough edges around all of us, you know, and how we encountered and how we maneuvered and stuff like that. And I think that the bottom line is, for the most part, without some rogue random AT or EMT or PT or doc, we're all working for the same goal.
Right.
So there's not an EMT out there that wants to see a kid be, you know, paralyzed because it wasn't handled properly. Just like there's not a PT, you know, we're all working towards the same goal. And if we're willing to come together and discuss our differences, like, okay, we spine board, we don't spine board, we want to remove equipment, whatever that is, if we're willing to discuss it and come up with as a team what that best practice is, it feels really good when an emergency happens and we're able to handle it. But again, it goes back to that, like, I'm not always right. You know what I mean? Just like they may not always be right. And so let's come to the table and be humble and just discuss it and figure out what the best practice is.
And it's also knowing when to fight those battles and when to let those go as well too. And that's all about relationship building, you know, like you can't always win every battle and you shouldn't always try to pick a fight, right? Like you need to know when to shut up and listen and when to pipe up and speak up for, you know, and advocate for whoever you're working with.
Right. And part of that is doing our part, you know, as ATs, taking the EBPs, taking the CEUs, the very things that we might gripe about on occasion are the things that educate us about the best practices. And we filter through those. And these are our intangibles. These are the things we don't, you know, we don't deviate from. And here's why. So I'm not coming in and saying, this is how we're doing it because I said, this is how we're doing it. But this is how we're doing it because here's the research that shows this is the best practice. And so there's like a difference in how you do that. But yeah, having those, you know, intangibles of where you're not going to shift. That chapter, one of my favorites, and it goes back to humility, but it talks about resilience thinking. And I loved as he talked about that. But the key lies in shifting our focus from prediction to reconfiguring. So instead of trying to figure out what's going to happen next, how can we adapt to whatever's coming? You know, and I think there's comfort in those protocols, like we do X and then Y happens, we do Y and then Z happens,
right?
But life doesn't flow like that. And so it's like, how can we reconfigure to make things work? And that's humility and adapting.
Yeah. I think it's definitely in both books. It's in, Extreme Ownership, and I'm almost positive it's in their new one too, but they always talk about the enemy gets a vote. Like you can always predict and always, or not predict, you can always try and plan. But as soon as you go out and try to do something, somebody else is going to have a plan that they don't care about your plan at all. And that's typically the injury, right? Like the injury is always going to be the enemy of athletic trainers. So we can plan, and that injury is going to happen. And it's not always going to be, you know, if we look at spine boardings, we almost always practice spine boardings where the person is supine. Well, what happens when they're prone, right? Like, we have to change and we have to adapt and change and things like that. Like if a student athlete goes down and it's a spine board and their face is flat on the ground, you can't just walk over and be like, well, I didn't train for this, so screw it, I'm walking away. Sorry. You know, like, yeah, my bad, dude.
I gotta go.
Yeah.
Let me go read my manual.
Right. Yeah. Let me check A, B, and C. So we have to constantly adapt, but we also have to, like the book said, have to have resilience thinking and knowing that things are going to change and we have to change with them and we have to be ready to adapt and attack when those things happen. Right. So yeah, I love that part of the book too. That was one of my favorite things when I talked about the resilience thinking.
I was able to use that even in, you know, that whole thinking and talking to a couple of my coaches who had a couple rough games and that whole idea of just resilience thinking, like, how do we get these kids to, like, instead of focusing in on what went wrong, like, how do we get them thinking resiliently? How do they get past that? How do they move past that? You know? So it's interesting how even in athletic training, this can like bleed over into the people we work with every day, you know?
Right. Yeah. I don't want to say I love when it happens, because we're dealing with it now, like within my school, where we are dealing with a very rough football season. And we're getting like fixated on one different problem or one problem each game or one situation, but we need to step back and to have that resilient thinking. Like, one of the things that kind of drives me nuts, and I don't want to talk too bad about like coaches, but when an athlete goes down and it's like, what do we do? We lost our starting whoever. It's like, well, hold on. We need to be a little bit more resilient and thinking like, who's the next man up? And like, we have to do that in athletic training. Because what if I'm gone for a weekend? What if I miss a game? So like within my team, like I knew I was going away that last weekend or however long ago that was. I knew I was going away. So I had to continuously put my team in situations that, hey, what if I'm not here today? And they had that understanding. So, you know, that when something bad happened or when we had an incident, they were able to actually step up and take over things fairly seamlessly without me. And I don't always need to be there. It's just, you know,
it's also very hard to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like we talked about, and I think what we talked about with Kurt last week was you want to build a team and you want to work yourself out of a job, basically. You want to create resilience within the people you work with so that they can step up and take over if I'm not there or if I may not even be in the same room, and they need to have that ability to have that decentralized command and to just take over the situation and not have to worry or think about it. So.
And I would say, and I said this to you before, but just to reiterate, I think what went on that, like, so seeing the planning you had ahead of time, you included me on those emails, like, hey, I'm going to be out of town. This is how it's going to flow was awesome. So I knew that coming in, who was going to be there.
Right.
But then seeing that happen, I was able to come back and shoot you a text and say, hey, like, you prepared them well. Not that you babysat them, not that they were like, oh, before we do this next step, let me call John in Texas and make sure it's the right one. They went to work because you obviously trained them and gave them the confidence to understand that you believed in them. You know what I mean? And that they could do their job, and they did, which is how you want things to flow, you know, and you do want to be able to not be there, you know? But there's always that like piece, like either that worry, or sometimes I think it's attached to the pride, like, can they function without me? You know what I mean? And getting beyond that to be like, yeah, there's great people that can function when I'm not here, you know?
All right.
And for me, it's a little different. What'd you say?
I said, all right, enough about me.
For me, it's a little different though, but after, you know, that incident happened and you were there, it's like, I don't have, it is just me. Like, it is just me. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm gone, I can get someone to cover who's just like a fill-in. I don't have a regular, you know, person. But there's times I'm not there where practices are happening or whatever. And so what do I need to do to just prepare coaches to handle things when I'm not there and starting to think through, you know, some of those things? Because there's me, and then there's football, swimming, volleyball. You know, there's six other things going on. And so thinking that kind of creation of team and teams, that communication and how to make sure everybody's on the same page, you know, which is important.
Right. One of the big things with communication is if we look ahead to chapter 7 and seeing the whole system is sharing a level of transparency too, and always communicating those things. And, you know, with us, we always have goals, what we want to do with our student athletes. We talk about, how do we see the system and how do we get others to see the system within, you know, the separate teams? So I'll let you kind of talk about that chapter a little bit.
Yeah. So, just in getting that, you know, they talked about, that niece and that non-niece kind of, you know, parallel in how they communicate. And you can, they even went as far to do that example about the soccer players from, you know, and this is just your part of the field and this is what you do, but we're not going to communicate. And obviously we all know that that can't work. And so it's that idea of communicating in a way that everybody has the information they need, but nobody has all the information, because that's almost like information overload. And so finding that balance in how we do things. So you know, thinking through like an injury. So if we have, you know, an athlete that's out on a concussion protocol, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that communication piece with that athlete's parents, with the counselors on the education side, with the coach who's wondering when they're going back, with whatever physician, you know, they're working with. And it's that idea that all of us have to have a certain amount of information in order to best treat that patient. So if I'm, you know, deciding that, you know, the counselor needs no information, you know what I mean, except for a concussion, then mm-hmm. how are they going to communicate with the teachers and how are we going to work towards the goal of getting them back, you know, educationally? Same goes true with the parents and with the athlete. And so it's this idea that, you know, he talks about in the book that they almost held on to information like it was gold. Yeah, like, I mean, you just didn't get it. So they were talking how like opportunities were missed to actually grab hold of guys on their list that they were trying to get their targets because information wasn't willing to be shared. And so I think for me, it's coming back in and realizing that a certain amount of communication has to go on daily between all the different areas I work with to make sure that everybody has the information they need to once again reach whatever goal that is. So if it's Johnny getting back in the classroom, you know what I mean? Then we need to be working together mm-hmm. with teachers, counselors, doctor, et cetera. So I'm following whatever the doctor has put out there. The teachers are aware of what that is and how far they can push, you know, in the classroom. And so we're all communicating on that same page. And I think the communication piece, while for me, it's never been, holding onto it like gold, like I have something that's like so valuable that I don't want to share it. It really is realizing the priority of that and making sure I have time in my day to communicate with the people I need to communicate with regularly.
Right.
And for me, and I think a lot of athletic trainers, once the bell rings and school's out and you're moving from sport to sport and rehab and this and that and the other, it's remembering that priority is making sure we're all on the same page communicating. So I got to set time in my day for that.
Right. So, you know, that kind of goes back into, as you start talking about those silos and the Mies boxes, it, you know, we touched on kind of everybody holding on to one piece of information. It really goes back to the previous chapter and the chapter I want to kind of finish the book on and you know, today's discussion is the chapter entitled Team of Teams, and it follows the title of the book. And it really, it's funny that this, there's a couple chapters, I believe, that are actually titled Team of Teams in here. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely two. But for me, it's funny. It's almost the jelly out of this donut is right in the middle of this book, right? It's mm-hmm. not at the end. It's right in the middle. It's right in chapter six. So you like hit it and you're like, read it. And you're like, well, wait, wasn't I, you know, you look at books, you're always like, oh, I should always find it, read that last. But I think they do a good job of it's right in the middle. They tell you what it is, but then they give more examples throughout the book of how the teams kind of work together. And, you know, like you said, when they hold on to separate pieces of information, you know, they're not always working together. And you find that, when they're not working together, they're not efficient, they're not effective, and they're not working towards, even though they may say they're working towards a common goal, they're not always working towards a common goal. Right. And that's where everything kind of just falls apart. You have these specialists who just fall apart because they're not sharing certain things. And the other day I shared a picture on Twitter on I believe how this book helps athletic trainers build those relationships and build the trust within each other. And Jeremy and I were talking about it and he was like, I'm really confused, right? Like he yeah. looks at, or you look at that like infographic and it's confusing. It's chaotic. It's hectic. And it shows you like three different things. It shows you command, which is a traditional organization chart, which like they talk about in the beginning of the book is Taylor, who kind of comes through and organizes these big factories so that everybody's mm-hmm. working in separate things. And it worked perfect in the early 1900s. Like it's
manufacturing and
And how that worked, but then things needed to change. So now we have these, a command, like one person, a command of teams, and you you look at the next infographic, it's one big person who's in command of these like four little chaotic like bubbles. And then the crux of the whole book is the team of teams. And what you see is essentially five different clusters of five different clusters of teams, but then you have these lines kind of crisscrossing all over the place. And what we're looking at when we look at the book and when we look at the lessons that they're trying to impart here is the lines connect one team to another team to the next team. And it's not always the same person. It's another person or another part of that team connecting with another one. So it's completely interwoven. You see differences, but at the same time, they're all connected. And right. The only way they only get connected is building relationships, having trust within each other, and having a common goal. So that's right. One of the things that like we will constantly go back to this month is those three things are incredibly important for people who want to lead or be a leader in this profession or really any profession.
Right. I would agree 100%. And it's funny when you posted that on Twitter and then I saw Jeremy's response, like that looks, I can't remember what he said, but I mean, it was chaotic, but you know, that really is the only way to ensure that everyone's on the same page. And if you look closely at that diagram, it's exactly as you said, it's like, you know, this little cluster over here, they are all communicating with this one, but there's someone and there's someone and it's coming back and forth and they're all on the same page. And I think, you know, one of the things I think I would say athletic trainers for the most part, I'm so proud of our profession and I think we're great at is building relationships with our student athletes. I think that, you know, I very rarely come in contact with an athletic trainer who is not just really good at getting to know and building trust and building relationships with the student athletes. And my challenge for myself and other athletic trainers as we look as leadership is to take that same commitment to building those relationships there and move them out a little bit into your coaches, with your doctors, with your EMTs, with the athletic trainers you have around you. And let's start building that network up, you know, even more in the sense. And I think for me, that was one of the main takeaways is I was able to look back and think through the things that I could say, okay, I do these well, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And here are the things where I can challenge myself to work a little harder. And for me personally, it is stepping outside of the zone of my athletes and moving that into coaches and moving that into my team docs and PTs and EMTs, and then spreading that even more into networking with other athletic trainers. Cause just like, you know, in the book, essentially in order to be victorious, they had to work together. They became stronger as they worked together. Mm-hmm. All those silos worked together, they became stronger. I think we as a unit of athletic trainers, the more that we branch out, build relationships and work together, the stronger we're gonna be as a profession. And I think that's a huge, you know, takeaway for me from the book.
Right,
and that absolutely involves spending some time doing it. And I've been guilty of not doing it and not seeing the value in it. I think, you know, that was a big takeaway for me. And I have a page full of, you know, different goals and notes and challenges for myself as I take this book and kind of put it into action.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that as I look back, really kind of starting to read a lot of books like this and changing the way I go about my day-to-day life. And even looking back just to 2 weeks ago, how I mean, nervous to start this podcast and to start this series. It's because it's incredibly difficult to put these things into practice. And once you do, it's a train that should not stop. Mm-hmm. And you have to have an understanding that you can put things, you can put these lessons, you can put these books, you can put everything into practice and have an understanding of them. But the big understanding is that it's incredibly difficult to do these things on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. But it's also an incredibly rewarding thing to be able to step up, be a resilient person for everybody, whether it's your students, whether it's your parents, whether it's, you know, your coaches, your administrators, to be that hub of that sports medicine team and be the person who relies on or is relied upon to provide that, you know, that, that balance and to help move a goal forward. You know, that, that was one of the things that, as I looked at this book, it's like, okay, it's not just us in our own little office. We affect so many different things, and so many different things affect us. So how can we make all the, all those things better?
Yeah. And I think it can get overwhelming, like, especially all the books that you're diving into this month. Like, you could feel exceptionally overwhelmed at the task at hand with all the great ideas, you know what I mean? And the different things that are coming out of each book. I can only imagine, like, deer in the headlight, like, how am I going to do all of this? But even as he talked about in the book, I mean, it kind of started on just a dry erase board for him and just drawing it out. He talks about the, you know, the hourglass and the chain and just kind of breaking it down into small components. And again, understanding, you know, like you said, it's like, it's almost that ripple effect. So like, let's start doing something. So read a book and take something out of it that you're going to put into practice. And that kind of creates that ripple. And the next thing you know, you've got the train moving, you've got the ripple moving, you know, you're going forward and you're seeing those changes. Because it would be a disservice to us if we read these books and then just felt this weight of like, oh, it's all on me. I gotta do, you know, a million things. And so it's breaking it down into those smaller components so you can, like, you know, see the change little by little. But nonetheless, see the change.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's a really good thing to kind of bring this discussion to an end. Jeremy, do you have any questions about the book or any thoughts that you'd like to talk about?
No, I'm still not 100% sure on the graph like we had talked about. You said, you know, there's the one, and basically that would be like every single problem would come up to me if that was the command. So that's the first, the most basic one. And then the second one, it seemed like, so in this situation, I might have my four seniors and they're kind of in charge. So if there's a problem, then it goes up to them and then they can kind of deal with it. But then again, in my situation here at the high school, I don't really get, I guess that means that any of the students can come talk to anybody else to help deal with any of the problems and grow and learn there. Because currently we have, you know, some of our students, most of the taping that they learn, the fingers, the wrist, the hand, they learn that from each other rather than from us. Like, they have to test off on us and we have to make, you know, approve them to do it. But can you kind of work through those charts given the example that I just gave?
So I'll talk about that final one, that final chart that's a complete mess and looks like a spider web all over the place. If you look at that chart, and if anybody has a chance to go to the Twitter post I had, what you're looking at, it's, like I said, it looks like a complete mess. But if you really look at, there's five different major points in there. There's a pentagon, a triangle, a square, circle, and then a smaller square. Those would be essentially the main parts of a team. So if you want to put yourself right in the middle as the athletic trainer, you would be the smaller square, and you would have, like Jeremy, in your case, that would be the people you work with. So your student athletes, your student aides, maybe an administrator or something like that. And then if you look out to the outside, the four other clusters, imagine one as your EMS unit, the other one as a team doctor, another one as like a physical therapist that you work with, or if you want to look at the other one as your school board or an administrator, like a superintendent, and that group of people, what's connecting everybody is sharing of information. And that's what all those lines are. And that's just the trust and the relationships that are built that brings everybody together. And the only way you're going to be brought together is to have a common goal. So as athletic trainers, our common goal is to keep our student athletes playing and keep them healthy. So if we're not sharing the information to keep them playing or to keep them healthy, then you're going to break down those lines of communication, those lines of trust, those lines of relationships that have been built. So does that help a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. Because again, for me, it was, it is confusing without reading the book. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the book.
Yeah.
And so I think just understanding that each of the different clusters is a in this example as a different organization, like you said, EMS right. or the nurse or whatever. But then again, in that situation, the students aren't really communicating with the doctors or the physical therapist, mm-hmm. again, unless it's like the athlete. And so I guess I'm trying to figure out how it would work. I know that obviously students or parents could communicate with the school board or the nurse or that kind right. of situation. And then the doctors could communicate with the school board or that kind of thing. And so I'm just wondering how, instead of being the central hub of communication, I guess more like diagram two. So go ahead, Kelly.
I was just thinking, like, from a sense, you're right. Like, your students probably aren't communicating to the doctors. But if you look at that piece, even as part of your broader team, the students who are talking just about your program and what they're learning and what you're doing are building the morale and the excitement about your program that are continuing. So that bleeds out into your school board or into these other areas, like, this is going on here. So I think maybe shift your looking at it, not just like medically, but just in general as sports medicine at your at Pasadena High School. You know what I mean? Like your students aren't maybe calling your doctor about an athlete because that would be not in their realm, but you're communicating with them and what you're teaching and what they're learning and what they're teaching other students is bleeding out into the community that your docs and your superintendent and your administrators and your school board are hearing about it. And that's building your team's morale and just its place within your school system and your school district. I don't know if that helps a little bit.
Yeah, it definitely helps clarify almost any of the explanation we get on this is going to help. And so just like when I took the kids on a field trip to the rodeo, I didn't call the school mm-hmm. board and say, hey, but my principal knew that I was going. He was also there. So he brought in different media people. They posted on the school district website. You know, obviously we're communicating about it here on the podcast. So there's lots of different angles where I didn't send it to the school district. He did. He brought that up. I didn't send it to the rodeo.
Right.
He brought that out. And then my kids sharing pictures or whatever on their Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is. So that is kind of, I think, exactly what you're talking about, is where they're sharing what they're doing and the positive impact.
Right.
And so I think I'm getting it now. Is that kind of what we're saying?
Yeah. I think if you were to take a look at that last graph and just draw an arrow, doesn't matter where you're drawing the arrow, but the arrow is essentially the goal that you're trying to achieve. If you get all those big clusters moving in the direction of that arrow, that's essentially what you want. You're just trying to build the relationships, build trust so that all these little clusters are moving in the same direction.
Good. Now I just have to define that one goal and get ever moving in that direction, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's about all I got.
Kelly, do you want to add anything?
No, I think we're good. I think I'm good. I think I would highly recommend the book, and I think just the ideas we talked about, resilience thinking and building that team of teams are important.
So this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipsalter. So I'll have a link to the book, to the show notes. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipsalter. So it's leadership and then the last name of the guest. So that's how it's going to be for this whole series. So if that helps you remember, again, Leadership Salter for Kelly Salter. Go ahead, John.
Like I talked about our last two podcasts, I always like to try to end these with a closing gratitude. So I'm going to go ahead and start. I'm going to thank our administrators for allowing me to take some a little bit of time away and allowing me to do more research and do more work for this podcast. They know that how important athletic training is and how important it is for our student athletes, and allowing me to have a little extra time to step away and do prep for this and to actually do the podcast on days where you know, I have to come in a little bit later or take an hour away. So I want to thank the people I work with, my administrators, the coaching staffs for allowing me to do that. Jeremy, you're up.
All right. I've talked before about, you know, blaming my coworker for the kids not doing what they were supposed to be doing before I was kind of taking ownership of everything and saying, it's my fault. I'm the leader of that group. I didn't communicate my expectations clearly, right? And so there's actually like a ton of stuff that Bill does that I don't do. And he's actually at the point right now, he just met with the TRS, which is our retirement system here in Texas, and he's retiring. And so I said, hey man, can you just write down the all the stuff that you do have done so far this year so that I have a timeline of, you know, in August, this needs to get taken care of in September and October. And so we're communicating there because there's a ton of stuff that he does that I don't have to do. You know, we've been working together for almost 12 years and we kind of know what to expect of each other and who's going to be where. And so it's really been amazing to have that consistent coworker for all that time, but then also just so much of the other stuff. Hey, can you do this? Sure. Hey, can you do that? Yeah, I got it. And then he just gets it done. So Bill, I appreciate all the work you do. And I know that you're kind of on the way out, but you're leaving obviously a great legacy being here at Pasadena High School for almost 40 years. So Bill, thanks.
Kelly, you're up. Yeah.
So I just want to, today I was thinking as you were talking gratitude, we don't have a necessary sports medicine student program at Groves, but I have a handful of students who are in every day, learning, helping me out, doing some tasks that I probably couldn't handle on my own. And so for Elise and Joy and Zach and, Nia, and Bria, I appreciate all of your help, and just your interest at this point in sports medicine gets me pretty excited. So thank you.
That's awesome. That's all I have today for this episode. I know next week we are going to be speaking with Brandy Curry on goals and goal setting for growth. And I think that's a very important thing when we talk about leadership is to always work towards a goal. I know we talked a lot about it tonight. You know, having a common goal when it comes to different teams, but what about the individual? How can goal builder goals and growth help an individual be a better leader? So join us next week as we talk with Brandy Curry on goals and leadership.
Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipsalter. Again, they were discussing the book Team of Teams by, what was the name?
General Stanley McChrystal.
Stanley McChrystal. So you can check that out or go to the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipsalter, and that'll have a link to it there. John, Kelly, thank you. And again, I think I just said it, but for Jeremy, John, and Kelly, the Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap.